You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 2003, U.S. Marine Lieutenant Mike Scotti was part of the force that invaded Iraq. In addition to his rifle and other military gear, he brought along a video camera, which he used to document his experience from the long, boring waits in camps and convoys to fierce firefights. After Mrs. Scotti returned home, filmmaker Christian Fraga incorporated his footage into a documentary called Severe Clear. Mike Scotti, who's now a captain, joins me along with Mr. Fraga, who directed, edited, and produced the film. It opens today at the Angelica Film Center at Houston and Mercer Streets, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Did the two of you know each other before you started working on this film?
Not at all. We met, in fact, it's actually pretty random how it all happened. Mike was back from the war in 2004, and he was carrying a bag of maybe 40 mini DV tapes, and he figured, let me go to NYU Film School, see if I can maybe find a young film student to take this footage that I have and condense it so I don't have to carry around 40 tapes. And he snuck his way past the guards, and he actually bumped into one of my interns of a production company, Cirque Productions in Manhattan. And as a graduate of NYU, we do a lot of work with them, and he bumped into my intern, and they got to talking. And he said, hey, you should meet my boss, Christian Fraga. Mike and I met a week later, and, you know, within minutes of seeing Mike's footage and really talking to him and hearing his story, I knew his was a story I very much wanted to tell.
And you knew that you could get a full-length film out of it?
Well, no. I mean, actually, in hindsight, had we probably stopped to think about it, maybe we wouldn't have done it. But, I mean, that was the thing. I wanted to, the picture doesn't have sit-down interviews, and I wanted to use his footage. And I think the key to making this film work was staying on his footage, and that was the big, that was the tough part of making this film.
Well, Mike, how much of this film reflects what you had hoped a film would do?
All of it. And I'm very proud of the work that Christian and the guys at Cirque Productions did. It was just, they captured the essence of what it's like to be in battle.
Well, when you were first shooting this footage, which took place in real time, you didn't need special effects, you had the real thing. Did you always think that you'd be making a film out of it? Or was this more like just home movies that you might show people somewhere down the line, hey, look what I did in the war?
It was a combination of the home movie aspect of it, because I had filmed some stuff in Afghanistan. I saw how powerful it resonated with my friends and family back home. And it was also really notes for a book. It was more like a video journal that I was going to use as a basis to go back and write, you know, a full-length narrative.
What's happened with the Afghanistan footage?
It's still there. It's on a shelf.
And we didn't use much of it, because what I realized was I very much wanted to focus on this one time period, 2003 and the invasion of Iraq. And any time we cut away from that, when I tried to incorporate Afghanistan or even present-day New York, the picture never worked.
Didn't you also film interviews with Mike that you didn't use?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, we went the more traditional route, and within a day or two, we realized that that was not the movie that I really wanted to make, and it didn't work.
Mike, this joins a growing list of films that are set in Iraq. Were you heartened when The Hurt Locker won all those Oscars?
I was. I'd seen The Hurt Locker last summer, on the recommendation of a lot of my friends from the Marine Corps that said, hey, you know, you need to go see this film. And I saw it, and I was, I was blown away. And, I know there's...
Well, he was blown away, too, at least one of the guys.
I know there's been discussions about, some of the accuracies, and I can understand where, the veterans are saying, that's their job, and, their lives depend on attention to detail. But I do think it's a great thing that the film is being talked about, it's being seen, and it's won.
Well, have you ever seen a war film that you felt really captured the experience the way you experienced it?
I think Full Metal Jacket did, and I think Saving Private Ryan did, and I think, going back to Paths of Glory, way back, I think that did also. Mm-hmm.
If I could actually throw in about Hurt Locker, what was interesting for me was I've been watching Mike's footage for 5 years, and these are his raw home videos, and I thought that picture was the first time I've seen something about the conflict where I thought that they got the cadence down. They got the way these guys talk, the way they move, and that's, for me, what was really exciting about watching The Hurt Locker. A lot of times I've seen other stuff that just hasn't really been too true to the footage that I've seen that Mike brought back.
And in the film, Mike, a number of the other Marines talk about how they feel that Marines have been misrepresented in movies over the years.
Yeah, I mean, there's been I don't want to name names, but I think there's been a couple of films that actually missed the mark, that were way off the mark. And you know, being a Marine is an honor and a privilege, and it's something that you need to earn. And it's something that, for those that are Marines, it's the most one of the most important things they'll ever do in their lives.
Although you record a fair amount of roughhousing, practical jokes, and other activities that some people might consider immature behavior.
Well, you know, it's the average age is 19 in the United States Marine Corps, and you know, for the enlisted guys, and you know, it is what it is. But it's, you know, it is the nation's finest fighting force. So,
do they feel misunderstood?
Well, there's a joke, right? USMC stands for Uncle Sam's Misguided Children, so who knows? But, you know, it's really the Marine Corps is an extension of society in that the young man who's, or woman who steps into the recruiting office that wants to be a Marine is already kind of cut from a different cloth.
How old were you when you enlisted?
I was actually 18, and I spent 4 years as an enlisted reservist and then 4 years as an officer.
And did it have to be the Marines? Couldn't it have been the Air Force or something?
No, it had to be the
Navy?
Had to be the Marines.
Why? Did you? Was there a tradition in your family?
No. Well, I had one relative. I had an older cousin, Ed, who was a Marine. And I wanted to be a part of the elite force and have, you know, to see if I had what it took to put on that uniform.
Many in the military are disillusioned by their wartime experiences, and quite a few have to cope with PTSD for the rest of their lives. But you re-enlisted.
You know, I think that you know, I think anybody that comes back from any type of combat, not anybody, but a large number of people will have some sort of PTSD, and either they can work through it or they can't. What I found is that you can either make what happened in a war a source of great strength, or you can let it become a weakness.
Do you think that you were helped by the fact that you were filming these things, which took a little bit of the stress off of you?
I'd been asked that before, and I don't think it helped in the situation. And we actually used the camera as a tool. But I think that coming home and you know, being in a room for a couple of weeks and just writing everything down that happened and reviewing the footage, and then handing it to somebody like Christian, who has this, you know, artistic genius and can get it up on the big screen, is very cathartic. It's almost like a therapy.
Well, how were you able to keep filming even during firefights? Did anyone ever say to you, put that camera down and start shooting?
Well, if you notice when it's, you know, and when it gets really bad, the camera's just all over the place, or I'll just, I have put it down like that, where the shot is, you know, the camera's actually on its side. But my job, you know, really entailed having one hand free to have the radio handset, and the other hand would have usually been on a set of binoculars. So, you know, my primary mission wasn't that of a rifleman. It was to call an artillery fire and coordinate the fire of others. So it never did get in the way. So
how did your experience in Afghanistan compare to your time in Iraq?
The time in Iraq was, for me, was much more difficult because of the terrain that we were fighting. You know, we were largely fighting in cities and towns versus out in a, you know, desert-like, you know, mountainous region. Neither one of them are really that great to fight in, but I'd rather have standoff range where I can see the enemy versus having them, you know, 10 meters away from me.
Although now there's a whole different intensity in
Absolutely.
Afghanistan.
Right now, the war that they're fighting in Afghanistan is much more difficult than what we fought in 2001. Much more difficult.
Are there certain things that the military won't allow you to film or won't allow you to include in a film?
Well, I mean, on my part, I really wasn't that concerned. I mean, when we got Mike's footage, I mean, we obviously wanted to do due diligence and find out legally what we could or could not show. But Mike and I had an agreement, you know, as long as I was true and fair to what he went through, I had final cut in the picture. And going in, I didn't want to shy away from anything. I took everything that, you know, Mike had given me. And I wasn't too concerned about that. I realized that, you know, perhaps that would be an issue. But I went out, we made the film, and we haven't had much of an issue in terms of the military as a whole.
And one thing that I kind of gave myself some self-censorship on was wounded or dead Marines. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't live with myself if I did that.
Were there journalists embedded with your unit?
There were four. One of those being Dr. Bob Arnott. And, you know, in the scene where there's somebody referring to it as it looks like it's Apocalypse Now, that's his voice. And that was his live satellite phone transmission that he made, you know, live on TV. And, you know, he was standing next to the colonel, and we were surrounded and taking RPGs and you know, heavy machine gun fire.
So. Some of your fellow Marines also shot footage. Did you ever give them any specific instructions as to what they should shoot?
No, we were just kind of all separated. And, you know, one of my buddies, Lieutenant Joe Haleko, was back, you know, with the guns, you know, as part of the artillery battery. And two of the other Marines, Tim Lynch and Major Jamar Bataxel, were kind of spread out over different companies.
My guests are Mike Scotty. Are you now a captain, even though you're no longer serving in the military?
I'm a former captain, so I'm you know.
But yeah. if you reenlisted, you'd be a captain again?
I'd be a captain or you know, potentially a major. Or they throw me in the brig, one or the other. I'm not sure.
Former Captain Mike Scotty, who was a lieutenant when he filmed all of this footage of the U.S. invasion of Iraq that has now been put into a feature film by Christian Fraga. The film's called Severe Clear, and it is opening today at the Angelica Film Center at Houston and Mercer Streets. The film starts with you traveling by sea to Kuwait. How long did that take?
It's about 40 days.
They don't fly you there?
You know, some of the Marines flew there, and you know, a large number of us, we float over on the ships, which is what we did to Afghanistan, too.
But it would suggest 40 days, that long before the United States made any commitment to an invasion, it was already sending an invasionary force.
Sure. I mean, and that's what I think a lot of the power of the footage comes from, in that you see that kind of commitment already being made. And like you said, they didn't fly them in. They're on the sea for 40 days. And these are the things that back home, at least I didn't even think about. You know, I was listening to what the politicians were saying, but all the while, these guys are already being sent.
And you have incorporated news footage and speeches by President Bush and other members of the administration because you wanted to put things into context?
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, the key is this film isn't about the architects of the war. You know, this is a character study about Mike Scotty and the Marines who were there. And what's interesting is this is the way they heard it. They would get little bits of news here and news there. And certainly when the combat started, the BBC, actually, when their radios would go out, it'd be interesting that they would tune into the BBC to find out actually what was happening on the front lines. And that, to me, was amazing, how the news media was used by these guys to actually get the job done.
And that little radio was something my mom and dad gave me. It was a shortwave radio that I just carried around, and I was going to go backpacking across the world. So.
Well, how inspired were you by what was being said in Washington? Many of the Marines in the film come across as rather cynical, and I wonder how you all respond to things like that ritual where you're anointed with oil and told that you're about to perform deeds that will echo throughout eternity.
You know, what's interesting, you know, the Marine on the front line is worried about the tactical level situation. So we're worried about, you know, what the weapons and that we have and, you know, our supplies and where the enemy is. You know, you have the operational level where the generals are moving the pieces across the battlefield. And then you have the strategic level, which has, you know, we have no say in that, absolutely no say. That's the political level. And, you know, it's interesting to take a step back as a young Marine and say, you know, we are actually a part of history here. So it's... You know, you're at the same time looking at the tactical level and trying to stay alive, but you also know that you're a part of something that is bigger than yourself.
Well, is politics ever discussed, or is it simply the job that has to be done?
To be honest, I didn't have one political discussion almost the entire time that I was in the Marine Corps.
Although a couple of the Marines shout out, we're here to save democracy.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Is that meant as a joke?
Well, it's interesting. You know, one of the remarks you see that, here, you know, you see the Iraqi people doing a religious march, and, you know, it's something they hadn't been able to do since 1979. I think I love that moment in the film because no matter what you think politically, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, they had much more freedom than they did.
And the politics of it, that's why, again, you never see President Bush, you never see Vice President Cheney, you hear them because these guys have no interaction with the politicians. And I thought that was the key because all these decisions that are being made loom over these Marines, but they can't worry about that.
But their officers are making political speeches to some degree, aren't they?
Well, and that's part – that is – for me, that's part of the energy and the interesting kind of dichotomy between what we're being – you know, what we're seeing and what we're hearing and the way these guys go about their mission. That's – for me, that's what's very fascinating.
One of the things the Marines want everyone to know is that there are long periods of total boredom. We always think of this – their experience as action, action, action.
That's correct. I mean, there are long, you know, periods of boredom that are punctuated by moments of extreme terror. And the way that – Christian kind of paralleled that with the film, and the way he edited it, I think, is brilliant. In that, you in the theater, you can actually feel the energy level going up and down.
What did your unit do after the invasion started?
We were basically involved as part of Regimental Combat Team 1, where we would head up Route 7, and you know, our first kind of engagement was that of An-Nasiriyah. And we had several follow-on engagements at other towns called Elkhout and further up north.
And you talk about, or some of the Marines talk about, not having proper equipment and supplies. After all that time?
Yeah. That was something that actually concerned me was, you know, very clearly we didn't have enough of the inserts. We call them sappy plates, or they're basically ceramic plates that can stop an AK-47 round, and they're meant to cover the upper torso. And in a perfect world, every Marine would have one for the front of his body armor and for the back of his body armor, covering his vital organs besides his head. And just not having enough of those was something that was it was incredible to me. And you know,
well, had you thought about that before you went into battle?
Well, that's not our, you know, we're not supply officers or whatever, and that's not our, you know, we're the ones that are fighting the battles, and we're supposed to have that stuff before we go in.
What were you most concerned about? Things like chemical attacks?
My biggest concern was actually making a mistake and transposing a number, after not sleeping for 3 or 4 days. And you know, if it's Papa Victor 8269 or 47, and I say 826, 49 or 7, those artillery rounds are going to land on the wrong grid. And that was my biggest fear.
Did that ever happen?
It never happened on my end, but it actually, you know, there were some friendly fire incidences, and you know, one of my defining moments really as a Marine and as a human being was having the ability to be in the right time and place to actually shut one of those off. And you know, that's something that I'm most proud of is being there.
What kind of resistance did you face? Were you surprised by how easy it was?
There were times where there was very little resistance, and then we'd hit an area where there'd be a tremendous amount of resistance, and it would slog down, and you start thinking, well, if every small town and city are like this one, like the battle for Elkhout for us was pretty intense for 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, and, you know, it could have turned into a slugfest very, very easily, but, you know, the Marine Corps broke the back.
So. You were there fairly early, so when you entered Baghdad, you even witnessed the looting. What did you think was going on?
You know, it was an interesting transformation over about 72 hours, and it went from them, you know, chanting "Mr. Bush good, Mr. Bush good," to complete chaos and looting. Almost insanity and disorder and anarchy, very, very quickly. And soon after, you know, the people's faces changed. And I actually, a couple of us in the battalion caught some kind of bug, and I spent 24 hours just puking and, you know, lost like 15 pounds and was on IVs and stuff.
You carried a picture of a girl you knew from high school who was killed in 9/11. Were the 9/11 attacks motivation for a lot of your fellow Marines?
I believe that they were, but it was not something that was openly discussed, but they were certainly for me.
Were you aware that there were no direct connections between Iraq and 9/11? Although
no.
Some people in the White House try to make that connection. It's never been made.
You know, I was not really aware of that at the time. And
would it have mattered to you?
You know, the direct between 9/11 and Iraq, it could have mattered, but what would have mattered more is actually the weapons of mass destruction, because it would have been easy for, you know, Al-Qaeda or whoever to get those in their hands if they had the money. And
so was there a letdown when it became apparent that there were no hidden weapons of mass destruction?
I would be lying if I said that there was.
And I think that's also key, too, because we also focused on – we're making a movie about 2003. And this picture took 5 years to make. So, I mean, Mike and I would have discussions, and I would say I'm not really interested in the Mike of 2005, 2006, because I wanted to key into what his thoughts and his ideas were when they went in. And I think the connection with Beth and 9/11, and I think that was a way into the man Mike Scotti, not just the Marine. And I thought that was actually very important for the audience to see.
But I wonder if it matters in the end if you're a good Marine. That the reason that you were given for going into Iraq turned out not to be true.
If you're a good Marine, the reason is irrelevant. If you're a good Marine, you follow orders, as long as they're legal orders. You follow your orders and you accomplish the mission that's at hand, and you take care of your troops. That is the essence of a Marine.
We have a call from a listener who thinks that he, or wrote in anyway, the listener thinks that he served with you, and he was in the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines. He wants to know who you were with, which regiment and unit.
I was with Weapons Company, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, which was part of Regimental Combat Team 1. So
you were probably had little contact with this person.
It sounds like he was in a different battalion than I was, so we were in the same regiment. But, you know, battalions kind of fight off on their own. It's about a 1,500-man unit.
Now, Christian, you said that obviously with hindsight you knew all sorts of things that that Mike couldn't have known mm-hmm. when he was shooting this. But that had to affect you on some level when you were putting this film together.
Well, absolutely. I mean, but the idea, again, for me was to look at this point. Because not many films have talked about the invasion. A lot of the films that have come out, including The Hurt Locker, they're all about the occupation. And what I was interested in doing was to not look back at what went down through the prism of today. I was really interested in what these guys were talking about because they were going into the unknown. At this point, you know, they had no idea if Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, well, he's going to drop scuds on them.
Absolutely. And that, to me, is the key. And when you hear the commander's speech about talking about, you know, going in, what they're going to do is going to echo through, you know, through time. And all, I mean, these guys are going in, you know, based on 9/11, based on these weapons of mass destruction, based on, you know, we have to do this so this doesn't happen in the cities of our country. So, I mean, that time period, and if you hear Rumsfeld, if you hear Cheney, if you hear President Bush, I mean, there's a lot of weight to what is happening. And I think for me, certainly, this time period was a tipping point.
And a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, are talking about the mushroom cloud.
Absolutely.
That was we were going to see.
Absolutely.
If we didn't invade Iraq.
100%. And that's what's interesting. And to me, the guys who were there 72 hours after, you know, they take Baghdad and you hear Bush number one, these guys already know something's up. And that, to me, was fascinating.
So how long after the invasion did you feel like you were involved in an occupation?
It was shortly thereafter, and I was lucky enough to be finished, and mm-hmm. I didn't.
So you came home pretty early.
Fairly early, you know, under the 1st Marine Division, they sent a bunch of us that had voluntarily extended home.
And then you came home, and you were hearing something very different.
Yeah, it was, and it took a couple of months to kind of realize. You know, there's no eureka moment where it's like you think the weapons of mass destruction are in that specific building and they're not there. It's just a gradual kind of coming around where you're like scratching your head. And the, you know, next thing you know, it's a year later
and
you still haven't found anything.
We started to interrupt, but we were able to witness that while we were making the movie.
Yeah.
And there were times where I would ask Mike questions and he would be guarded and he wouldn't really give me the answer. But then I'd look at his notes or I'd read something else. And then I'd push him a little more. And when we got him to finally, we locked him in a room for about 3 weeks and made him write everything out. And when he started, when it started coming out, it was very interesting to see him going back and starting to remember and starting to process a lot of what went down. And I thought that was really, that really helped bring the movie to a specific point of really getting into his head.
Why did you call the film Severe Clear?
Severe Clear is an FAA designation, infinite visibility. It's a rare flying condition, and the morning of September 11th was actually designated severe clear. And again, without getting into the politics of should we or should we not have gone in, that moment in time, the events of September 11th, are what propelled Mike into this journey to Afghanistan and ultimately to Iraq. And again, I think 9/11 certainly in 2003 hovers over a lot of what these Marines were going through.
Should I assume that that most of the people who served with you have seen this film?
A large number have.
What's their reaction?
Overwhelmingly, they love it. There have been, you know, one or two here and there who you know, they haven't said that they loved it. They haven't said that they didn't like it. They just didn't say much. But I would say probably 95% of the people that have seen it and a large number of military, former military from other wars that see it really love the film. It resonates with them, and I can see it in their eyes. You know, they really liked it.
So what are you doing, Mike, when you're not working on a film with Christian?
I've been involved in a couple of different businesses. I got an MBA from NYU Stern and was in investment banking at Credit Suisse for a while and then ran a distress company for a while and then took some time off and went to Vietnam, went backpacking. And now I'm after the release of the film, I'm going to be back into the world of business in some capacity.
No more filmmaking.
I don't know about that, actually. You know, we'll see.
I hear there's some pretty good footage of Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, that Mike's going to have to take somewhere else. 5 years. I've done my time with Mike Scotti. 5 years.
Thank you both so much for being with us, Christian Fraga, who incorporated the footage that Mike Scotti filmed before and during and after the invasion of Iraq and put it directed, edited, and produced. Mm-hmm. This film called Severe Clear. Mike Scotti, who is the subject, the filmmaker on another level, and also the source of all of the, pretty much all of the dialogue that we hear, all of the comments that we hear. The film opens at the Angelica Film Center at Houston and Mercer Streets today, and I want to thank the two of you for being on our show today.
Thank you very much for having us.